Father. The Father. We're actually going to talk about how God moves in the middle of our storms today. You want to talk about a Father who is with you and who brings you through even the worst storms. He's the best Father you could imagine. So we're going to be going through Acts chapter 27 today. It's a little bit longer chapter, but a fantastic story. So let me ask you this question as we get rolling, as we prepare for this chapter. Do you ever feel the need to be in control? You have control issues? Anyone have control issues? This chapter will challenge your control issues. But right along with that, one reason that many of us struggle with control and needing to be in control is we can have this sense and maybe even a bit of a worry about passing the big faith tests in life. Am I really going to... You know, when people look, are they going to say, yeah, they passed the test. Yeah, they made it through well. And when you're not in control, you can't be the one who decides how you pass the test or how you even take the test. That's hard. I know no mothers or fathers have ever felt that way in this room where you're thinking, oh, Lord, how is the rest of the world going to look at me based on how my children are passing the test? No one's ever felt that way, right? Only me? Yeah, I knew it. Only me. Okay, true confessions. So, in 1736, you may have heard of this man, John Wesley. John Wesley, very well-known preacher, church leader, trained many leaders. He was quite the preacher, quite the speaker, well known, and he was on a voyage. And he happened to be on this voyage with a group of German Christians. And there were other English Christians on the ship, and English not Christians. But there was a group of German Christians on this ship, and we know them in history as the Moravians. And the Moravians were a people of worship and a people of prayer. And out of their worship and prayer, they became a people of mission. And loads of them would head out from Herrnhut in Germany, and they would head out from this place to go to various nations. Many of them would die, and more would come to take their place. But they were somehow a people of faith. And John Wesley was on the ship with them when they encountered rough waters. Quite the storm came upon them. And this is an excerpt from his journal entry. It kind of reminds me of Acts chapter 7 or 27. This is from John Wesley's journal. On January 25th, 1736, in the midst of the psalm wherewith their service began, this is the Germans, the Moravians, they had just begun their worship time on the ship. The sea broke over. Imagine as if we were beginning to worship this morning and all of a sudden floods started coming through the windows. This is what happened. The sea broke over, split the mainsail in pieces, no big deal, covered the ship, and poured in between the decks as if the great deep had already swallowed us up. A terrible screaming began among the English. The Germans calmly sung on. I asked one of them afterwards, and this is Old English, "Was you not afraid?" And he answered, "I thank God, no." And I asked, "But were not your women and children afraid?" He replied mildly, "No, our women and children are not afraid to die." They kept worshiping in the middle of the storm. Imagine, you're in a ship. It's being totally swamped. And not only are they calm, but they keep on singing. They don't even stop the music. And he's stunned by this. He's amazed by this. If you read in history, John and Charles Wesley were so impacted by this trip with the Moravians that they actually said, we think we may have actually gotten saved on that trip. We realized these guys knew Jesus in a way we didn't. It's amazing. Now, with this more modern story, let's read Acts 27. And when it was decided that we should sail for Italy, they delivered Paul and some other prisoners to a centurion of the Augustan cohort named Julius. And embarking in a ship of Adramidium, which was about to sail to the ports along the coast of Asia, that's coming up, coming kind of north and then heading west along the Mediterranean coast, we put to sea, accompanied by Aristarchus, a Macedonian from Thessalonica. The next day we put in at Sidon, and Julius treated Paul kindly, gave him leave to go to his friends and be cared for. And putting out to sea from there, we sailed under the lee of Cyprus, because the winds were against us. And when we had sailed across the open sea, along the coast of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra in Lycia. There the centurion found a ship of Alexandria sailing for Italy and put us on board. We sailed slowly for a number of days and arrived with difficulty off Cnidus, as the wind did not allow us to go farther. We sailed under the lee of Crete off Salmone. Coasting along it with difficulty, we came to a place called Fair Havens, near which was the city of Lycia. And since much time had passed and the voyage was now dangerous, because even the fast was already over, Paul advised them, saying, "Sirs, I perceive that the voyage will be with injury and much loss, not only of the cargo and the ship, but also of our lives." But the centurion paid more attention to the pilot and to the owner of the ship than to what Paul said. And because the harbor was not suitable to spend the winter in, the majority decided to put out to sea from there, on the chance that somehow they could reach Phoenix, not Arizona. A harbor of Crete, different Phoenix, facing both southwest and northwest, and spend the winter there. But all did not go according to plan. Now, when the south wind blew gently, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, they weighed anchor and sailed along Crete close to the shore. But soon a tempestuous wind called the Northeaster struck down from the land. And when the ship was caught and could not face the wind, we gave way to it and were driven along. Running under the lee of a small island called Cauda, we managed with difficulty to secure the ship's boat. After hoisting it up, they used supports to undergird the ship. Then, fearing that they would run aground on the Syrtis, they lowered the gear. And thus they were driven along. So they lowered down the sails. And they're just being driven by the wind. Since we were violently storm-tossed, they began the next day to jettison the cargo. And on the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. When neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small tempest lay on us, all hope of our being saved was at last abandoned. Since they had been without food for a long time, Paul stood up among them and said, "Men, you should have listened to me and not have set sail from Crete and incurred this injury and loss. Yet now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For this very night there stood before me an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I worship. And he said, 'Do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand before Caesar. And behold, God has granted you all those who sail with you. So take heart, men, for I have faith in God that it will be exactly as I have been told. But we must run aground on some island.' When the 14th night had come, as we were being driven across the Adriatic Sea, about midnight the sailors suspected that they were nearing land. So they took a sounding and found 20 fathoms. A little farther on, they took a sounding again and found 15 fathoms. And fearing that we might run on the rocks, they let down four anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come. And as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship and had lowered the ship's boat into the sea under pretense of laying out anchors from the bow, Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, "Unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved." Then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the ship's boat and let it go. As day was about to dawn, Paul urged them all to take some food, saying, "Today is the 14th day that you've continued in suspense and without food, having taken nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take some food, for it will give you strength, for not a hair is to perish from the head of any of you." And when he had said these things, he took bread, and giving thanks to God in the presence of all, he broke it and began to eat. Then they all were encouraged and ate some food themselves. We were in all 276 persons in the ship. And when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship, throwing out the wheat into the sea. Now when it was day, they did not recognize the land, but they noticed a bay with a beach on which they planned, if possible, to run the ship ashore. So they cast off the anchors, left them in the sea, at the same time loosening the ropes that tied the rudders. Then hoisting the foresail to the wind, they made for the beach. But striking a reef, they ran the vessel aground. The bow stuck and remained immovable, and the stern was being broken up by the surf. The soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners, lest any should swim away and escape. But the centurion, wishing to save Paul, kept them from carrying out their plan. He ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and make for the land, and the rest on planks or on pieces of the ship. And so it was that all were brought safely to land. Wow. So God has spoken to Paul before he ever made it to Jerusalem, saying, "You're going to get to Rome." Everyone else is saying, "Don't go to Jerusalem. Stop, stop. You're going to have trouble." He says, "No, I got to get to Jerusalem, but then I got to get to Rome." He gets arrested in Jerusalem. He gets escorted out of Jerusalem by Romans trying to keep him alive. He goes to Caesarea. He stands before officials there. He's held in prison there for a few years, before finally he's able to appeal to Caesar, and now he makes the journey to Rome. And God's prophetic word to him and his promise to him, "You're going to make it to Rome. You're going to testify to me in Rome. It looks like you're finally going to see it." And what happens? Storm. Difficult winds. It's the wrong season for travel. Nothing is going right. Nothing is going well. And even when he speaks prophetically to the centurion who has him in captivity and says, "I don't think this is going to go well," no one listens. And they find themselves in the storm. What do you do in the storm? And this is no small storm. This isn't like we think about windstorm in the fall. You know, it'll live forever, at least for a long time. Famous in Spokane, our windstorm that came through, and I think the final count was over 900 trees that came down in our area. But it blew through in an evening, and then it's over, and we start cleaning up. But this storm, not only do they not just get to hide out inside, they're in a little boat. Waves just keep coming, keep crashing. Day one, day two, day three, day four, and it just keeps going. And as we move through the days of this storm, things get progressively worse and worse. I just imagine Paul and his friend Aristarchus. Aristarchus had been with him in some other tough days. In fact, Aristarchus was one who was dragged before the mobs. One of the cities that Paul was in, when they were saying, "Paul, don't go out. Aristarchus was there. Aristarchus got dragged out. Paul's with other mighty men of God. You can bet they're praying. You can bet they're worshiping. And you know what happens as they pray and as they worship? As they seek God? The storm gets worse. Oh, mighty men of faith! And the storm gets worse. On day one, the big northeaster moves in. It's kind of cool in the Greek. I think I lost it in my notes. It has a really cool name in Greek. It sounds way cooler than northeaster. But the first thing that happens on day one is control is gone. And they can't, with all their sailing skills, all the technical ability that these men have, they cannot get the ship to steer into the wind. And they're forced to just let the wind blow them. Right off the bat on day one, they've lost control. Guys, it happens to everybody. It happens to the best of us. It happens to the strongest. It happens to the weakest. We all have storms. And we all have this times in our lives where we've lost control. And you can't make the circumstances line up the way you want them to. But that's just day one. You lose control on day one. On day two, you have to throw the cargo overboard. The whole reason for the trip, this Alexandrian merchant ship, is they're bringing cargo. They're putting into port across the Mediterranean. This is how they're making their money. And they have to throw their provision overboard. Thankfully, they didn't throw the prisoners all overboard. But when you get in the middle of a storm like this, suddenly you have to reevaluate what is really important. And things that you thought were important, things you thought, this is why we're even on the journey, go over the side. Priorities shift in the storm. Don't think God isn't at work in this. When you find yourself in a storm and you're out of control, you can't fix it, and you're just to survive, you're having to throw over what you thought was your provision for the future. You begin to offload baggage. That's just day two. Day three, they have to throw the tackle overboard. The tackle, it's your whole system of ropes and pulleys. You know how you get a sailing ship to go in any direction? Your tackle. If you have no ropes and you have no pulleys, you can't make the sails do anything. You can't control the ship. So even when the storm is over, guess what? You can't control your ship. They've had to willingly throw even more control overboard. A storm, when a storm comes into your life, and I'm talking big time challenges where you're saying, God, we don't know what to do. Lord, what do we do? In the middle of that, not only are your priorities being readjusted, but your willingness to even let go of normal life control is adjusted. God works major adjustments in our hearts and our lives in the middle of the storm. And that's just day three. We're only 3 days into 14 days. You got 11 more days and you've lost all ability for control. Your provision's gone. Life is just completely adjusted. I'm a charismatic Christian leader. I've been to loads of fantastic prayer meetings, and where men and women will prophesy and encourage the church. I can't tell you how many meetings I've been in where people talk about the third day. On the third day, the breakthrough comes. And they're speaking, of course, about Jesus and rising from the dead on the third day. But Paul's third day just gets worse. And you can proclaim it. Yeah, victory. We are getting breakthrough. It's the third day, baby. Woo! And then day four happens. And you're still not delivered. And the storm is still raging. You could begin to say, God, what are you doing? What's going on? We're praying. God, we're seeking you. We're listening. We're throwing stuff off. We're getting light. And the storm keeps coming. And day after day after day, you actually can lose all track of, is it even day? Because the clouds are so dark, you can't even see the sun. And they haven't been able to see the light of the sun day after day after day. And you get to day 13, and it says, they have lost all hope. They've lost all hope of being rescued. There's no hope. Outside of a miracle, hope is gone. They've tried everything practically to fix the problem. You ever been there? You've done everything you know to do, and you just, I don't know what else to do. Lord, unless you break in, all hope is lost. And for these guys, for many of them on the ship, these aren't believers. These aren't Christians. You've got Paul. You've got Aristarchus. Likely Luke is with them as well. But most of them have just lost all hope. Hope is gone. Control is gone. Your cargo's gone. Even more control is gone. And now hope is gone. Storms bring us to the end of ourselves. Difficult storms. Some of you are riding through those now. Difficult storms. They bring you to the end of yourself where you realize, I can pray the best prayer. I can say all the right things. I can't bring the breakthrough. And it brings you to the end of yourself. I can imagine. They've been without food for days. Coming up on 2 weeks where they haven't even eaten. There's nothing like a forced fast for 2 weeks to bring you to the end of yourself. I know when I've fasted, when I felt like God asked me to do it, I could do it. But when it was put upon me by someone else, it was hard. I was irritable. You get to the end of yourself. And it's day 13 when Paul stands up with a really encouraging word. I told you so. God, you wanna, like, I'm sure people are just like, yeah, we're going to throttle you right now. I told you so. But that's only where it starts. Only starts there. God never leaves it at I told you so. Now, he's also not afraid to tell you, I told you so. You know all the crazy things you're trying to do? I actually told you before you ever started this trip, don't do it. And you did it anyway. And you've lost the cargo. I told you that might happen. And I warned you that you'd probably lose the ship. Yep. Here we are. I told you so. But what God says isn't just, I told you so. And Paul addresses the crew. He addresses the ship. Because an angel of the Lord appeared to him in the middle of the night, spoke to him, and said, take heart, Paul. He says, don't be afraid, Paul. Take heart. And he renews the promise. You got to get before Caesar. I'm getting you to Rome. You're in the middle of the storm. Has anything changed? No, it's still dark. It's still raging. And God comes right in the middle of the storm and says, my word is still true. What I spoke to you, I'm still going to complete it. You got to get to Rome. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to rescue everyone else on the ship along with you. All the unbelievers on the ship, all the ones who pushed forward when Paul said, don't do it, he said, I'm going to rescue them all. Wow. And God says, yeah, the ship is going to be lost, but no one is going to die. No one's going to die. He doesn't leave us hopeless. God never leaves us hopeless and just saying, I told you so. That's what the devil does. The accuser of the brethren, who just points out your flaw. He points out you're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. God doesn't leave it there. He always points you forward and says, take heart. Take heart. Guys, if you're in a spot where the storm is raging and you're not sure what to do and you feel like you've lost control, take heart. God has a plan. Here's a prophetic reminder for you. What He spoke, He will accomplish. What He started, He will complete. He's going to do it. And it's right here when Paul gets, I'm sure it was encouraging to him. I mean, an angel shows up and says, hey, I know the storm is bad, but you're not going to die. Whew. Okay. And Paul gets to encourage the other 275 people on the ship and says, guys, we're not going to die. My God's going to get us through this. And you know what happens? That night, the sailors sense land. I don't know how that works. I'm not a sailor. They sense land. Does it smell differently? I don't know. And so they start putting down anchors. And they're testing how deep is the water. You put it down, it's 20 fathoms. And then they put it down, it's 15 fathoms. Yep, it's getting shallower. And all of a sudden there's a glimmer of hope. There's a hint here. Maybe Paul's right. Maybe this isn't just a random religious prisoner guy. Maybe he's actually hearing something from a God. But the sailors, they don't have the faith of Paul. For them to realize that land is near, remember, they already threw overboard all their tackle. Any ability to control their ship and get them to land is gone. This is the most dangerous time, guys. When you start sensing breakthrough and you start sensing a real prophetic direction or even practical direction, I think there's a way out of this. We were hopeless. Now we start to have a bit of hope. This is the most dangerous time. The sailors knew it. Because to get to that shore, usually it means there's rocks, there's reefs, there's stuff, and you can't see it. They don't even know what the island is. And they can't control the ship even if they did. And so the sailors want to abandon ship. Because they've got a little boat. It rides a lot shallower in the water. And they're ready to abandon the whole rest of the crew, the prisoners, the soldiers. Sailors are ready to sneak out at night and get out. As in the deepest, darkest, most difficult times of your life, when you sense a hint of rescue is the most dangerous time, because you can tend to try to make it happen yourself instead of holding true to what the Lord has said. The sailors are ready to go make rescue happen at the expense of whoever else. If their ship goes down, the rest of them die. It's all about me, baby. This happens in the storm. Our attention can get onto ourselves and our own rescue at the expense of the rest. The sailors at this point failed the faith test. You ever feel like you've done that? You failed the faith test? Ugh, it was a really rough storm. It was really hard. And I bailed. They failed the faith test here. Let me just give you a clue. God didn't put them down. They failed the faith test. And God rescued him anyway. Day 14, sun comes up and they realize, yep, there really is an island. It wasn't just sensing it. There really is one, and they can see it. It's within view. And they try to make a run for it. And Paul says, all right, before we do this, everybody eat. And you realize they actually have kept some provision on the ship this whole time. Smart. They had some food. But they haven't had time to eat it. Or maybe the stomach to eat it. Those waves are really rolling. And he says, all right, everybody eat. Get your strength. Let's eat. It's the last thing you want to do. You see the end in sight. You're ready for rescue. You're ready to go make it happen. And Paul says, stop. Eat. And Paul sits down and he gives thanks in front of them all 275 of them. And he eats. And they all eat. And then they throw the rest of the food overboard. And at this point, you have nothing left on the ship but the people and the people. Even the food is gone now. If this doesn't work, all hope is lost anyway. Sometimes, in the storms of life, we have to be willing to stop, nourish. You've got to be nourished. Guys, if you're not being nourished by the Lord, you are not strong. You hear that? If you're not being nourished by the Lord, you might not realize how weak you really are because of the stress and the busyness and the storms around you. But if you are not being nourished, if you're not feeding on the Lord, you are not strong. But He wants you to be strong. And Paul leads the way as a leader, as a man of God, and says, stop and eat. And they do. They're strengthened. And then they throw over the food. The good stuff. This is good food. And they throw overboard what is good for the sake of what is better. These are all the things that happen to us in the real storms of life. Where you get to the point where you go, okay, Jesus, it's you or nothing. And things you thought were so good, you could never let that go from the ship. They throw it over and they get ready to get into the, as close as they can, to the beach. And what happens? Ship hits a reef. Ah! You think, okay, we're making it. We're in. We've done everything. We've lightened the ship. We're as light as we can be. And they start to come in and they hit a reef anyway. And the ship begins to break up in the strong winds. The strong waves. And the very ship is being lost. But God brings them through. They lost control. They lost their cargo. They lost more control. They lost hope. It's just loss, 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 loss. Pretty soon now they've given up their food, and now at the very tail end they've lost the ship, and the soldiers are ready to kill them. But it doesn't happen. And on planks and pieces of what was broken, what was wrecked, what was lost, every last one of them comes through. And God is true to the word before they ever set sail. And Paul said, I perceive that we're going to lose everything. We shouldn't do this. Then he encourages him. Says God's going to bring us all through. And he does. And God uses this storm not just as a great story for us. It is. It's a fantastic story. But in the lives of real people, there were 275 people on that ship with Paul. And they saw God break through. They heard a man continue to speak the word of the Lord. When it was blowing, when everything was hopeless outside of God. And they heard a man continue to say what God said. And God made his name great. He's still doing it. Thousands of years later now. Still making his name great through this story. Guys, God is not just a God that we say it like, oh, he's God over the storm. And we sing nice songs. Sometimes he calms the storm, and other times he calms his child. It's a really cute song. Until you're the one in the storm. And you're going, ah! But he's still doing it. He really does do it, guys. And if we'll be open to him and just say, God, feed me in the middle of the storm. Lead me in the middle of the storm. He'll do it. He's faithful to his word. He will do it. If you haven't been there yet, you will be. This is a really exciting prophetic word for you. You ready for this? If you've never been to that point where you've come to the end of yourself and your own ability, you will be. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, John. Thanks for that encouraging, helpful word today. But we're not unaware, and we're not uninformed, and we're not unequipped for moments like that and seasons like that. When we come to the end of ourselves, our own control, our own ability to provide, our own ability to make it happen, we come to the end of ourselves, we have only begun to tap into the depth of the provision of God. He wasn't just God over a storm. He was God in the middle of the storm. He was God right there with Paul in the middle of the storm. He was a God who cared about all 276 people on that ship. And he cares about you. He cares about your life and your storm. And where you're at the end of yourself and you go, God, I don't know what to do. He cares about it. And he's involved. He's right in the middle of that storm with you. Do you trust him? Sometimes we go, yo, I'm kind of right there with those sailors that failed the faith test in the middle of the storm. Been there. But God will bring you through. He will bring you to a place of faith. He's so amazing and so faithful. He will bring you to a place of faith. If you're at all fearful of, am I going to pass the test? Or do I need to make this happen? The sailors tried to take control and make it happen, and they actually failed the test by doing that. God will not let his people ultimately fail. He will bring you through. It's his promise to you. It's Father's Day. I've been telling you a story about your father. This is your heavenly father. He doesn't keep you from all the storms. Sometimes he does. Sometimes he lets you sail right through the storm. He lets you realize how little control you really have. And he teaches you how to trust in him as your father. Guys, we have the best father imaginable. And he'll bring you through the storm.